You're listening to episode 13 of the College of Mythic Cartography podcast with me, Willem Larson, recorded in Portland, Oregon on June 30th, 2008. In this episode, we get down and dirty with riddles, and we'll go over the fundamental steps of acquiring a riddling skill, both at solving riddles and creating riddles. It's the same thing. Now, this is going to be a little difficult to do just by audio, but I'll do my best to describe what tool you'll use and what it looks like when you do this riddling work. As literate peoples, we get to use pens and paper. If the cool thing is imagining when you get to the stage where you're good enough at this, you can start holding all these maps in your head, and that's when it really gets fun and you really reach that place of mastery. Riddling really has four steps. Now, I'm a junkie for the wise compass, that idea that the compass directions really contain pretty much all wisdom and the basic structure for anything you might want to learn or do. It's it contains the day, it contains the year, it contains a human lifetime, it contains the cycle of learning. Well, for me, the wise compass also contains the arc of riddling. It's a whole circle. It's a cycle. It begins with observation. It then goes to mapping, which you could call research. And then moves to letting go. And then it goes to the aha. And then back to observation. So really what that's describing is, say, when I'm solving a riddle, I listen to the riddle. I listen to the riddle teller's tone of voice, what words they accent, because, of course, they know the answer to the riddle, right? So I'm definitely keying in on what they are emphasizing and what parts of the riddle for them carry all the meaning. Riddles can be really deceptive if they're told incorrectly, because, or told by someone who doesn't know the answer, because they'll give weight to the wrong words that are just filler words. Riddles often have these kinds of filler words. So I'll observe the riddle teller's body and their voice, and then once I've heard the riddle, then I go to work on the riddle itself, and keying off of what parts of the riddle were given more emotional weight or more emphasis, I'll start drawing a map with a riddle in the middle, and word will have its own little web associated with it. This actually is reminding me of a story, and I'd like to give an example of this process, but what I'll go ahead and do is move you through the arc real fast and then tell you about my story. So you map out all the aspects of the riddle and all the implications of every word. And then once you've done that, once you've done the work, you're done. I mean, there's not really anything else you can do. The only thing you had to go on was the riddle. You worked the riddle as hard as you could. Now it's time to let it go. You just let it go. And you'll be in that land of letting it go and of not really thinking about it for however long it takes. You do something else. You go on to other activities. You go for a walk. You uh, you know, you get to work on something else, whatever it is, you just move your attention away from the riddle. And of course, that's when you have your aha. Oftentimes this will happen just before falling asleep or maybe when waking up. Of course, that's your dream self jumping in on the solving of the riddle for you. It definitely wants to help you out, and your linear mind is so noisy during the day that it has a hard time speaking over it and speaking loud enough for you to hear. So that's the cycle of solving a riddle. The cycle of creating a riddle is the same thing. Say I want to write a riddle on a book. The thing that we call a book. Well, I look at the book. You know, I notice it has a spine. I notice it has pages. I notice it has a dust jacket. I notice the pages have words on them. The pages are white. The words are black. All of this I'm noticing. What I then do is I make a map out of it. I pull all of that stuff that I notice and I write it all down in a map so I can look at it. And I draw lines between things that are connected, and I draw lines to indicating relationships, and I let it be. It's not at all a list of aspects. It's a very like topographical sort of experience you're communicating by having this sort of web of interrelated words and ideas and aspects of this book. Now, as soon as I started describing parts of the book, you probably already heard the riddle forming. You know, spine, jacket, leaves, pages. You know, like this is, you can easily see that you could, a person could use all these words and yet, the idea of the book would be quite subtle, would be quite hidden. Now, when you want to turn all this information into a poem, you still have a little bit of craft left. So in solving the riddle, you have this letting go phase. Well, that's still involved, but in kind of a funny way. The letting go and the aha sort of do a dance with each other. Because what you need to turn all this, all these aspects of this book into a poem that has no obvious subject, right? That's all you're doing. That's all a riddle is. A riddle is a poem with a mysterious subject, right? A subject that isn't stated obviously. Now, there's a lot of traditions in which you can write riddles. Anglo-Saxon traditions have a fascinating array of riddling styles. There's a lot of in my culture and in the Anglo-Saxon tradition, there's a lot of I am neither this nor that, and some people think of this, but I am actually that. You know, you'll have this list of, you know, what the thing isn't and what the thing is, and then at the end you can say, what am I? That's one kind of riddle. Riddles often have a very animist quality to them too, because it's about this object speaking mysteriously about itself. And it can be quite beautiful. Also, what's fun is you can make the subject of a riddle seem far more terrifying than it actually is. And it's both something that's a little misleading and also something that's quite revealing. For example, the story that I wanted to tell was about a riddle that a 10-year-old boy threw at me. One day, I was at a campsite, and there were people coming and going, and I was at the gate, and watching the, making sure everybody had a pass and belonged at our campsite. And in those situations, you often get this gaggle of young people who are hangers about, and, you know, their parents will let them run too far away, but they don't want to be around the camp. So then they end up hanging off of you and asking you questions and getting into fights with each other and sort of being the general entertainment. So I thought, oh, what fun, you know, hey, there's some young folks, they'll appreciate some riddles. And so I asked this young boy, hey, do you want to hear a riddle? And the boy was like, nah, not really. I was like, oh, okay. And he's like, oh, I got a riddle for you. So I may have caught him when he was like a little too old to have to try and answer a riddle, but he wasn't too old yet to have someone else suffer under one. And he said, you want to hear my riddle? And I was like, sure. I was ready for it. You know, I'm the riddle master, right? And he said, well, what's greater than God, more evil than the devil? Rich men want this, poor men have it, and people eating this die. Well, I thought on this, and I thought on this, and I was stumped over and over. I kept thinking to myself, you know, there's not, I mean, according to the world set up by the riddle, there is nothing greater than God. There is nothing more evil than the devil, right? I can't think of anything that rich men want, you know, besides more riches, I guess, you know, like, but, and that poor people would have, I mean, what do poor people have, you know, like family and, you know, closer to the land and, you know, that kind of thing. And people die eating it. What is it? Some kind of poison, but then it's greater than God. And, oh, and I just over and over, I just kept thinking, man, there's nothing that I can think of, you know, there's nothing answers this riddle. So for some of you have heard this riddle before and might be laughing at this point, like I am, because the answer of course was nothing. There's nothing greater than God. There's nothing more evil than the devil. Rich men want for nothing, and poor men have nothing, and people starve eating nothing. So this is kind of the funny aspect of riddles, where they can be so serious. You know, they could be really emotionally intense. I mean, I was kind of freaked out a little bit by this riddle. But then that, you know, what happened was I went on a journey where I meditated on the concept of nothing. Once I finally discovered that the answer was nothing, it really blew me away, you know, that this idea of nothing could be, have weight and mass and be a thing. And have all these relationships to all these diverse beings and powers. And that's the beauty of riddles, is they really screw with you, you know, and they give you an emotional relationship to an idea that was not there before. And that's why, really, a riddle is a poem. A riddle is a poetical articulation with that little bit of puzzling thrown in to even grab more of you. One thing that I didn't mention in any of my other podcasts or writings, I think, on the art of questioning, on riddling, on associative reasoning, is that I heard not too long ago that drugs, the addictive quality of drugs, does not come from them hitting the pleasure centers of our body and brain, but actually comes from them hitting the discovery centers, right? Human beings get more pleasure from discovery than they do from pleasure, right? And that's why you have this whole thing of, I can never get that same initial high, when you have an addict who's always trying to get back to that place because they already discovered it. They have to try something new now, right? And you'll see this all over the place, you know, whether people going from relationship to relationship or they'll go from sport to sport, always trying to look for the new high because it's about discovery. Well, once you get good at riddling, you'll find that you're more, and questioning, you'll find you're more than able to satisfy your own human need and addiction to this discovery experience. You'll have, in my tradition, I call them coyote bombs. And coyote is the trickster and transformer, oftentimes, I'll be standing on a street corner and suddenly I'll receive the answer to something that's just been nagging at me for days. And I'll just be like, oh my God, it's the best feeling ever, you know? And I mean, that's half the reason why, to the extent that I'm a prolific blogger or podcaster or writer or speaker, it's because I'm just like totally overcome with the ecstasy of this new realization. And I want to grab everybody by the shirt collar and the scruff and go, can you believe it? This is amazing. Listen to this, you know? And I love hearing other people's discoveries too, you know, because it's like a free coyote bomb, you know, without any effort expended. So it's great to have a culture of people who, you know, there's a circle of you who are always sharing new things that have hit them like a ton of bricks, and they're like totally rejuvenated by them. So let's get back on track with riddling. What you're doing is you're creating a poem. So you've mapped out all the aspects of that book. So let's see. I should have written down all those things I said. So I'm going to write down spine. I'm going to write down jacket, dust jacket. I'm going to write down pages. Obviously, there's words. There's in a book, there's ink. Let's see, what else do we have in a book? We have a cover. We have a front and back cover. Back cover. There's a title on a book. Now, each one of these things you can then associate it with, right? Who has spines? Well, people have spines. Let's see. Vertebrate animals have spines. So, you know. What has titles? Nobility has titles. You know. Nobility. You know, you have like Baron and Duke and all that kind of stuff. Dust jacket. Well, dust jacket, what is... That sounds like clothing. Clothing. Pages. Pages, there's another thing back to sort of that royalty notion. That's like a page. It can be like a squire or a court messenger. So back to nobility, have pages. And they're like servants. Ink. Well, ink is black, certainly in this case. Octopuses have ink. Octopi have ink. Squids. Let's see. Words. Words have sound. You spell words. Words come in sentences and paragraphs. Paragraphs. Ah, something I forgot that's in a book. Chapters. Chapter. What has chapters? What else has chapters? Well, there's, aren't there like, religious chapters or, fraternal chapters or social organization have chapters? Organizations. So this is, you just keep doing this. You keep riffing off of what you're seeing. And another thing is that this could be about a specific book. If it was a book that I knew was really well known in my culture, and that its bookishness was part of what made it a good subject for the riddle, I could do that. The thing is you don't want to create impossible riddles by being too subtle and too obscure. The ecstasy of the riddle is seeing how much you can give away, how close you can come to just saying it outright, and still nobody gets it. That's the coolest riddles of all. The riddles where when they finally hear the answer, they hit themselves and go, oh my God, that was staring me in the face the whole time. The riddles where when you ask them and then you tell the person the answer when they couldn't figure it out, then they go, what? How was I supposed to know that? Well, that's a riddle that you realize is either not a part of your culture, doesn't belong to your culture, isn't applicable or relevant or contextual, or it's simply a bad riddle. It's a riddle that's too obscure with ideas that aren't well enough connected back to what the common ground that you have between you and the other person as riddlers. Riddles, in large part, rely on a common cultural ground for their value. So, like with any question, riddles drive your awareness, and riddles take you from where you are deeper into yourself. And they'll change you, you know, like just like poetry. I mean, it's they'll shape your mind according to where you go with your riddles. So let's see. I've got all my aspects, spine, title, words of senses, words are spelled. Ah, typos. Books have typos in them at times. And errors. What else do books have? Let's see. Dust jacket in the bag. Authors. A book has an author, also known as a writer. Books. It's by the author is how we say it. By so and so. Books have a publisher. Usually either called a press or a house. Publishing press or a publishing house. All right. I might have enough here. So I've just spent this little amount of time scribbling out all these ideas. Oh, you can open and close a book. That's important. Open, book, close, book. And then also you can have a bookmark to bookmark. So you don't lose your place. All right, so normally this is where you would kind of sort of do the letting it go. You know, you just sort of look at it and start letting your poetical, metaphorical side come out. So I'm looking at this map of words and associations that I've made. And what I'm letting it do is I'm letting it settle in me, and I'm letting the juiciness of the associations come alive. Now I'm just realizing too that octopi and squids don't have spines, but they do have ink. That's kind of interesting. I may or may not do anything with that. So we've got that, I'm probably, you know what, I'll draw a line though between animal and octopi. Knowledge, you know, often books have stories and knowledge in them. I just add a couple things. Okay, at some point I just got to dive in here and make it come together. So stories make me think of dreams and experiences. We have book covers, bookmark. Okay. All right. So how about dreaming between the covers? Mark once knew his place, now lost and spineless. No longer at the silent court full of hushing leaves, he quests for his home. Where does it lie? Wherein does it lie? So the answer to that would be a book. I hope you'll cut me some slack and realize I just wrote this in this riddle in 10 minutes. Or 5 minutes, or however long here, and I'm not trying to impress anybody, but that's a fun little riddle, and that's how easy it is. All I did was write a poem about something mysterious, about an unstated subject. That's how simple riddling is. Now, to solve this poem, I would do this entire process in reverse, in a certain sense. I would, you know, have someone tell me the riddle, and then I would make my map of the riddle, and then I would let it go and let it shake out in my head, and then I may or may not have a relatively quick response. That's possible. You know, I might get it really fast. I think once you get good at the letting it go, you'll find things pop up pretty fast. One thing that I've had to relearn myself is that I'm not good enough of a, I'm not skilled enough at spoken tradition and memory skills just yet that I can totally abandon paper and pen. Whenever I try, I find that I tend to struggle and wander a bit. So I'm on this path just like anybody else. And so it's nice to have company on it. We're all learning this together. I'm no expert here, but certainly I think the way is simple enough and clear enough that you can find your way down it. So what is that? Once again, it's Mark once knew... Dreaming between the covers, Mark once knew his place, now lost and spineless. No longer at the silent court full of hushing leaves. He quests for his home. Wherein does it lie? You know, I'm going to change hushing to turning. Well, wait, no, because hushing is like a library. That's kind of cool. Yeah, no, I like that riddle. That's a fun riddle. So it's bookmark. The bookmark fell out of the book is basically what happened. And so now you've got to figure out what page it goes on. But really, all the riddle is asking where Mark is from And so I'd be satisfied if somebody just said a book rather than if they went all the way to, oh, well, the correct page in the book. But that would be pretty cool, too. I'd be impressed. Yeah, so there you go. Riddles. Way easy. Way easy. Once you get over that little speed bump, you know, that little panicky, oh, my God, how am I going to turn this in? You just play. You just play with it. The other thing is... you'll notice that there's lots of wordplay, and there's also can be some punning going on, which at times can be kind of corny. But you know, you use what you got. I mean, that's like the scholarship riddle for the College of Mythic Cartography's riddle workshop that I wrote. See, they're going down red in the west, western red cedar. See there, going down red in the west. I couldn't resist. Now, a fantastic resource for this is the book The Lord of the Rings and the book The Hobbit, and a sort of companion book to those books by this fellow David Day. I'll post it in the show notes, but basically the book is called The Hobbit Companion, and it goes through both the Lord of the Rings, I believe, and The Hobbit, and what he shows is what he thinks Tolkien did, the creative process that Tolkien underwent, and it's fascinating, and I totally buy it. I believe him. Tolkien himself hinted at this, that what he would do is start with a word and then wonder what the word meant. And that would send him to the Oxford Dictionary, which has all the etymologies and the histories, and he would free associate all the words. So like the word hobbit is both about as like all the elements of the story of the Hobbit in it. So a hob is a ring. Hobbs is a game of rings. Hobbit, a hob. God, what is? I'm now I'm riffing off the top of my head, trying to remember. Hobbit sounds like a rabbit, right? Rabbits live in burrows, right? Hob can also mean half. So you have halfling, you know, half-sized hobbit. You have hobgoblin, half-goblin, and that actually inspired Gollum, the creature Gollum, who was half-goblin, half-hobbit, essentially. He did this kind of work. He just, with the dictionary and with the sound of the word and with his knowledge of philology and etymology, the origins of language and the roots, he had this wonderful time and all these characters emerged. So I definitely encourage reading that book. Also, The Runes of Elfland, a book by Ari Burke and illustrated by Brian Froud, is really a cool contemporary version of these same kinds of things. Really fun book on fairies and runes and stories and all kinds of fun stuff. So what, you know, really what you do is, you know, you want to get in this world of sort of magic and mystery and monsters and terror and ecstasy and really good riddles will come from that. I think one fun riddle I heard and the author Neil Gaiman I read in his book Neverwhere was, I believe it went, I turn my head and you will, oh yeah, I turn my head and you will stay till you rot. I turn my head the other way and you are free to go. I live and die by my crooked teeth. And of course that's a key. So, you know, it's like you can really have a lot of fun with this. And And there's a lot of wisdom to be gotten from these riddles too, because they pull you into that relationship with objects where you really start to understand the objects as a fly wriggling in a web of relationships. I mean, just as a fascinating whole big picture kind of experience of something else. Now, you wouldn't do too shabby to write a riddle a day just for practice, to stay in practice. And heck, you know, more than that, as you get better and better and better, to have little riddle contests with your friends. All these things will stretch your ability to reason in this way, associatively. It's easy to follow a straight path. It's easy to go, I mean, in all truth, logic is a very basic and highly fallible thing. Everybody knows that, everybody knows. Many have heard of logical paradoxes, right? And where you're proceeding according to the bivalue system of logic you're on, but it breaks the system because there's an aspect to the situation you're proposing that is impossible according to your logical system, right? That's very common. Whereas associative reasoning can't be broken because it spreads out in a web, right? And it's about wandering in a wilderness. And you end up, it's perfectly fine if you loop back on yourself, if you go left or right, and you may cross the same spot many times, but each time it'll be enriched by where you've just been, and you find new connections and richer connections. This, in fact, will also be informed by your dreams, right? Your dreams are your native tongue for your own symbol set of riddles. As you tell riddles to people, they'll start becoming the symbol set of your common symbol set, your common metaphorical language, your native tongue. It's just we do this all the time. We use comic books and science fiction and fantasy and the Bible to speak about our experiences today, depending on, you know, our religion or our subculture. You know, oftentimes people think of it as geekery, you know, like very nerdy to use heroes from stories or to make obscure references. But that's actually as human as it gets. We use stories to understand ourselves and understand our lives. Hence, once again, I'm going to beat my drum. The importance of this kind of rewilding survival skill. This is long-term survival. This is long-term survival. It definitely has short-term implications and applications, without a doubt. You could use this right out of the gate to get better at tracking, to be a better experimenter with different wood and stone and animal bones and sinew and all that. It can be used together, and you'll thinking associatively. It's you have those eureka moments. I mean, that's associative reasoning, the eureka moment. That was not arrived at by going A, then B, then C, then D. That was arrived at by taking a bath and then going, holy crap. You know, just as soon as you relax, the idea hits you. So this skill can really be put to work in all kinds of areas of your life to rebuild not just riddles, but your the life you want, you know, the life you actually want. So you can, I'm sure, see how easily you can apply this to herbs and trees and animals, to stones. You can make riddles about all these aspects of rewilding, and by making that riddle you are going to turn each other into people who relate to those things. in this really juicy, deep way. You yourself will be snared up in the spider web that connects you to all these things. And this is way important. What's kind of killing me right now is normally in a riddle workshop or at a rewild camp where I'd be running a little thing on riddles. Then what we'd do is we'd go find a place on the land. And we would apply this directly to the physical shape of the land. You know, I would, for example, I would have someone, let's say myself, go find a sit spot, and I'd sit there, and I would ask, I would find 10 links from that spot, 10 things that connect to something else. And once again, I'd go through the drama and terror of, oh my God, what links do I choose? And, you know, from a million different things, and then I'd settle down and I'd just focus and I would find those links. I'm sitting next to a tree and that same kind of tree is over there. There's a fallen nutshell next to my foot. Well, what tree, but it doesn't belong to this tree I'm leaning against. Well, where is a tree that has those kind of nuts? Who dropped the nut? You know, probably a squirrel. Does it have squirrel teeth marks on it? Where's a link to, can I see the nearest squirrel, right? And so you slowly map out this thing, you know, this sort of potential connections to the world around you. And then you pick one of them. You pick the one that seems most fun. You follow it to that spot. And then you do a bunch more links and more links and more links and more links. And you follow them and follow them. And you end up going on this kind of wander quest. Which is, it's funny because it, technically speaking, it's an aimless wandering, but it has such a different quality to it. I'm a big fan of wandering, but this kind of riddle quest, riddle mapping of the land it has quite a magical feeling to it. What you'll notice too is that after a certain point, you'll not be so committed to always connecting up to other physical things, you know. Maybe it'll start with, wow, there's a patch of sunlight here. Can I go somewhere where there's a patch of the same kind of sunlight that's about as big, you know, and then that's temporary, you know. So you go find that. And then is there a place where I feel a certain kind of feeling here? As I look out on the land, can I see another place that gives me that same feeling? You know, so you start experiencing more and more that sort of that riddle space. Now let's talk about what it means to say that a riddle is just a poem with the subject missing, with it the mysterious presence of the subject. Well, that. We're writing poems here, so that means that we can use the tools of poetry, that in becoming better poets, we'll become better riddle makers. Certainly the craft and artistry of making a good riddle is that craft of making a good poem. And why not go for it? Why not go all the way and start writing riddles that are villanelles and sestinas and pantoums and sonnets and ballads. Let's play with meter. Let's play with rhyme. Now, I just wrote a free verse riddle because I'm, you know, sitting here and it's on the spot. But why not really put as much craft into these riddles as possible? And now you've got another one of those indigenous ancestral spoken tradition heritage skills that we used to do in winter sitting around the fire is endless tinkering with our storehouse, our treasure house of riddles and poetry and stories. and becoming really good craftsmen of these things. Not only that, but the you know, if your riddles start to become about the useful knowledge about the lives of animals, about how weather moves in your area, about the medicinal and edible values of plants, about secret places on the landscape and how to find them, you know, you make riddles about these things. They're worth making memorable. Now, I posted a link to the live performance, live on tape performance of Beowulf by the musician Benjamin Bagby, who did it and spoke in the original Anglo-Saxon for a few hours with nothing but a harp as accompaniment, and had this whole epic memorized. And it Beowulf is all about the meter. It's all about the rhyme, the front-ended alliterative rhyme, not the back-end rhyme, but the richness of the Old English and its ability to sound beautiful through alliteration. And, you know, that's the kind of potential we're looking at here in resuscitating this spoken tradition world, and resuscitating our oral histories. So have fun with this, you know, really explore this, and don't be shy. I'm more than I'd love to hear the riddles you come up with. If they're on rewilding subjects, so much the better, but we live in a modern world, so it really can be about anything, you know. And solving a riddle is about seeing hidden relationships, and it enshrines that knowledge of whatever that subject was in the form of the riddle. So you can learn herbal medicine this way. You can learn navigation and the constellations and bow making and how to do you can learn all, knots can be riddles, obviously, you know. So you can enshrine all your information this way, and this is another way to work on those very same rewilding skills. Oftentimes, I mean, I hear this like reduced to, oh, well, that's, you know, that's just a mnemonic to help me remember, these facts. You know, I'm studying for a test and I like came up with an acronym or something. Well, you know, to just make it a mnemonic is to really not do much service to the beauty and power of this part of our human heritage. It's more than a mnemonic. It's our art. It's our dreams. It's our myths. It's what makes us who we are. It's our culture. It's our stories. So I hope I covered all the big riddling categories that I wanted to address. You obviously can mix in the sacred question along with all these this riddling, and you'll have even more fulfilling results and more nourishing riddles come out of it. And if anybody has any questions about this, I definitely respond to excitement and energy and interest in terms of what podcasts I do. So I'm open to exploring the subject further with you. So, you've been listening to episode 13 of the College of Mythic Cartography podcast with me, Willem Larson, recorded in Portland, Oregon on June 30th, 2008. Thanks for listening.